I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Well, the ballots are cast, the votes are counted, and the winners declared. Soon, Missouri state lawmakers will return to the real work of legislating. Today, we sit down with political reporters in the Show Me State to find out what they'll be looking for in the newest session of Missouri's General Assembly, which begins next week. Will new issues like medical pot and legalized hemp need attention? And what about right to work, which some thought was already settled? Then, from jazz to rock and hip-hop, 2018 was a great year for music. To get you ready for the award shows, our panel will offer their favorite local and national artists of the year. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Missouri has a new governor, its third in 3 years. It has a new Senate president and a new House Speaker. But while many of the players are new, some of the issues have been around a while. Once again, lawmakers this year will try to pass a new prescription drug monitoring program. After all, Missouri is the only state in the nation without one as the opioid crisis rages. How to fund state highways is yet another hot topic. So is reining in the cost of Medicaid. That's the health care program for the poor. Lawmakers also will search for ways to jumpstart the economy. State revenues are expected to grow, but only at a paltry 2% rate, despite a strong economy and despite record low unemployment. All the legislative fun begins on Wednesday when lawmakers return to the Capitol to launch the 2019 legislative session. With us to talk about it are Samuel King. He covers Missouri government for KCUR. Samuel, always great to have you here.
Good to be here. Good morning.
Jason Rosenbaum covers government and politics for St. Louis Public Radio. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Jason, the faces are new in the State House, but the issues seem to have been around a while. Does that begin to sum things up in Missouri?
Yeah, because I think one of the unfortunate realities of Missouri politics that's become abundantly clear since Mike Parson became governor is a lot of the thorny, difficult issues that Missouri policymakers should have tackled years ago really haven't been. I think the fact that both Jane Nixon and Eric Greitens may have had some desires or aspirations for other things after they became governor probably prevented them from doing things like supporting increasing some sort of taxes for roads, coming up with a revenue source for early childhood education, really tackling the cost of Medicaid, as you mentioned. And since Governor Parsons' only likely aspiration is to run for one more full four-year term in 2020, I think it gives him a lot of latitude to stick his neck out and advocate for some policy positions that a lot of Republican politicians haven't done before. When I talked with him, he expressed interest in increasing the state's role in early childhood education, which will require a lot more money. And he's been pretty outspoken on a need to drum up more revenue for transportation, which neither of these things are easy or politically popular. So it'll be interesting to see how he works with a legislature that's of the same party as him.
You know, again, Samuel, you get a sense that this governor is going to stick around for a while. He's not going to face talk of impeachment like we heard a year ago with Governor Greitens. This is a different situation altogether.
He definitely already seems to have a better relationship with the legislature than Eric Greitens did. And I think a lot of that comes to the fact that he was in the legislature for so long. He's sort of one of them, so to speak. So I think that goes a long way toward his influence and, you know, also helping to, in a year where in a lot of states, Democrats made gains in the state house, Republicans, it ended up being a wash, really, in terms, especially in the House of Representatives. And sort of it might have just been a quirk of timing that the Senate, the Democrats were able to gain a Senate seat last year with that special election. So Parson is sort of in the driver's seat, although he wasn't sort of elected to that position.
You know, Jason, here we are mentioning the name of former Governor Greitens. He was in the news again in recent days. What was that about?
The House committee that investigated his various alleged misdeeds put out its final report. It released a lot of emails and transcripts that came about with this investigation. Not a lot of it was new. I mean, some of the transcripts were just transcripts of committee hearings that a lot of people covered. But there's still, I will just say this. I think that this committee was tremendously important and had a seismic impact on the governor, the former governor's decision to resign. But I think that even the committee members would concede it didn't find out everything. It didn't find out, like, who was funding the 501c4, A New Missouri. It didn't find out whether a certain interest group gave Missouri Times publisher Scott Faughn money to give to the ex-husband of the woman's lawyer. And a lot of these things are going to be left to either the Missouri Ethics Commission or Missouri legislators to decide whether they want to push forward on it. I would assume that there's machinations within the Missouri Ethics Commission about some of the campaign finance stuff. I'm not super optimistic, though, that legislators are really going to dig deep into who gave Al Watkins the money that we talked about, because there may be a lot of pressure for that issue to just kind of go at this point.
Well, let's turn to some issues here. We've mentioned some of them already, and maybe a good place to begin is the state's focus on highways and getting money to maintain those highways. You know, voters obviously last November rejected a tax increase to fund roads. It was a 10-cent a gallon tax bump that was proposed, sort of gradually phased in for 10 cents a gallon. What are lawmakers going to do now, Samuel, as you look at this?
Yeah, I spoke with Kansas City Democrat Greg Ray in the House of Representatives. He's on the Budget Committee. He was also on that 21st Century Transportation Task Force that came up with this gas tax idea as one way to deal with it. And he told me, quite frankly, I don't know where we go next. He called it a bipartisan issue. But there are some proposals, like Representative Greg Messenger says he plans to reintroduce his bill that would index registration and other driver user fees to inflation. Kind of a wonky way to say it there, but in terms of tying it to inflation instead of just having this flat rate, that would increase revenue. He claims it would bring in a lot more money, but in some sense it might, because registration fees haven't changed in Missouri in at least 35 years. Some haven't changed since the late 60s, and this was a part of now House Speaker Elijah Haar's proposal last year in terms of indexing. That was kind of removed last year. So it'll be interesting to see if that sort of comes back because he supports it. He's now in the speaker's chair, and you have other lawmakers are proposing that. So that's at least one idea. But again, that might not actually fill the gap that was needed and that came out with those reports.
Well, if there's this void in terms of figuring out what to do when it comes to highways and roads, Jason Rosenbaum, you know, that strikes me as a place where gubernatorial leadership might fill the void here.
Possibly, but
Should fill the void.
I think when we're talking about transportation and we're talking about getting more money for transportation and we're talking about increasing taxes for transportation, which will require a statewide vote, I know we like to blame politicians for a lot of these problems, but sometimes you got to put the onus on Missouri voters. They've had two opportunities in the past 4 years to raise taxes for transportation, and they've rejected each one. And I think that people in Missouri, and I'm talking about everyday people that clearly see the fact that there are problems with roads and highways, need to decide, do you want your roads to be in this condition and not pay anything more for it? Or are you going to accept some sort of tax increase that you may not be super enthralled about to improve a lot of the infrastructure around you? I think that's the bigger question, because the legislature could probably try to do something and I put a plan to the voters, but if the voters reject it, you can't blame the legislature or the governor for that. You have to put the responsibility where it belongs, and that's Missouri's populace.
So bottom line then, Samuel, do you expect lawmakers to tackle this issue this year, or are they going to punt it down the field one more time?
I don't know if they'd punt it down the field, but the question is whether what they do will actually have sort of impact. And I think to Jason's point, I think in somewhat to defend the voters, in some sense, there seems to be a sort of lack of trust in what these lawmakers will do with the money if they give them a tax increase. So I think they're seems to be, from a lot of people I talk to, some sort of will to do something about this. The question is how effective what will come out will be.
Okay. Let's turn to the prescription drug monitoring program. Again, Missouri, the only state in the country without one. This helps keep track of people in their prescriptions. Are they overusing opioids as they try to improve their conditions? What are the prospects for that legislation, Jason?
I think they're excellent. Senator Rob Schaff was the main opponent of a PDMP for many years and was willing to actually put his political capital on the line to try to stop it or to try to craft it in the way that he wants.
And he's no longer in the legislature.
He's no longer in the legislature. And I don't want to say that he was the only opponent of the PDMP system. There are other Republican senators who are, I would classify as more conservative and who have concerns about the data in the PDMP being exposed somehow, who are probably going to vote no on it. But I'm getting the sense that they're going to oppose it and move on. And there's already a prescription drug monitoring program that's based out of St. Louis County that's spread throughout a lot of the state. So it's kind of like, what hill do you want to die on?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not sensing that for conservatives, this is it. I think there are going to be other issues where some of those aforementioned lawmakers who are still there are going to be more active in. And I just see this as 2019 is the year where PDMP finally gets passed statewide.
You know, why have lawmakers been so reluctant to adopt this thing when every other state in the nation has one, Samuel? What's been the objection here? Is it sort of seen as too much information in the hands of government?
Yeah, that's definitely sort of the privacy concerns. We've seen the debate over the years where you have this philosophical opposition to government intrusion. And some lawmakers over the years have seen this as
right.
government intrusion in some ways the worst way. So you had, back in 17, you had this bill was advancing, but then the senators put in a provision that would purge the data after 6 months. And then, the supporters in the House were like, the pharmacists and the doctors are saying, well, you need more than 6 months of data to make sure this person isn't coming back and abusing it. So that made it a non-starter for them, that sort of poison pill, to use a phrase, a provision there. So that's when you talk about other issues like Real ID and stuff like that, even though you look at these things that under the umbrella of law and order and law enforcement and making people safer, there is this sort of this attention there with privacy that some Republican and conservative lawmakers have an issue with.
Let's turn to a different issue here as we sort of run down the big issues and the drama that will take place in Jefferson City this year as the 2019 legislative session kicks off. Jason Rosenbaum, you've mentioned pre-K education, that something that Governor Parson talked to you about. This might make Kansas City Mayor Sly James happy, who's been pushing his own early childhood initiative here in our town. That'll be up for a vote in a few weeks. The governor wants to begin the conversation at least about some type of statewide early childhood education program. Any sense of what he wants to do yet? And is he going to kick off this year with a call to get something done now?
I think he wants to make it part of his emphasis on workforce development. And in his view, the best way to prepare somebody for the workforce is to prepare them as early as possible. And there's a lot of research that says that a rigorous pre-K experience for a child will likely help them throughout their tenure in K through 12 education. Missouri actually does provide a little bit of money for pre-K programs. I learned that from St. Louis Public Radio education reporter Ryan Delaney, but it's such a small amount of money that's divided between so many school districts that it really doesn't affect how expansive some of these programs can be. So this is something that, like highways, is going to require money. Mm-hmm. You can't really expect a situation where school districts can offer either expanded or free pre-K experiences to their population if the money is not there to pay the personnel. And, I think that Governor Parson indicated that a lot of options were on the table to help pay for it. He mentioned that there's a U.S. Supreme Court case that allowed for taxation on out-of-state online retailers that I think is going to get a little bit of talk. So there's that. There's also the possibility of raising the cigarette taxes, but frankly, they tried to do that for early childhood education, I believe in 2016,
it
failed.
Yeah,
so
right.
it, just like highways and transportation, the question is, how do you pay for it? And if there's going to be a tax increase for it, you have to convince Missouri voters to actually adopt it.
You know, this is an interesting moment, Sam King, because, you know, Governor Parson is a conservative Republican regarded that way. And yet we're talking about an early childhood education program that's a big program. As Jason mentioned, a lot of cost attached to it. This is interesting coming from someone like Governor Parson. He obviously must think it's very, very important to proceed here.
And I think because looking at kind of fits into what he's talked about, as Jason said, the workforce development. And he did say, look, this is a long-term thing. This is something we have to look at in the long term. And I think it's something in terms of improving education and starting at the beginning and then, you know, some of the things and proposals in terms of workforce development, vocational education, to use a word, sort of that, making sure Missouri stays competitive in this new economy, because you're starting to see, just to use an example, in terms of the Amazon sweepstakes, like neither Kansas City or St. Louis made it to, the 20 finalists. The Apple debate, Missouri left out of that. You can say whether, okay, let's go after these two things. I think some of the factors and where these companies, these major companies tend to locate, does look at the education level of the workforce, the quality of the workforce. And while especially the big metros, Kansas City and St. Louis, have assets, they have educational facilities. Mm-hmm. There are other states that have more and states that are this size. So I think the governor is looking down the road and going back to the fact that he probably has the luxury of doing this now, to have his political capital. I'm going to use it to advocate for this thing.
Well, we're talking about the need for more money here, Jason, at a time when the state is projecting just a 2% bump in revenue growth over the next year here, even though employment is full, the economy seems to be doing pretty well. That's not the most robust number in the world. So in conjunction with that, you hear some talk about tinkering with taxes and tax reform. Even though lawmakers have cut taxes in recent years, what do you see happening on that front?
Well, lawmakers ended up passing a pretty comprehensive tax bill last year where they cut taxes at kind of an accelerated rate, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think it's been a popular thing in the Republican-controlled legislature to reduce taxation. I think the prospect of increasing taxes has been kind of a thorny subject. I mean, even the advocacy of a gas tax increase from Governor Parson was risky because there's just a lot of Republicans that will not support tax increases under any circumstances. Mm-hmm. I think there probably has to be a balance. Like, I don't think you want to raise taxes so high that you're causing people to leave the state, like Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But there comes a point where you don't have enough revenue for basic services, and it makes Missouri probably a less desirable place to live than states which may have more robust services and places.
Mm-hmm. So you think there'll be some discussion here, but you're not sure what's going to happen.
I think that's a fair summation of
okay.
My thoughts.
We're sitting here talking about the 2019 Missouri legislative session at this moment. Breaking news out of Kansas. The news now official. Longtime U.S. Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas will retire. He's saying this: I'm announcing I will serve the remainder of this term as your senator. That would run him through 2020. He says he'll be fighting for Kansas in these troubled times. However, I will not be a candidate in 2020 for a fifth U.S. Senate Senate term, that means an open race. That means lots of candidates and potentially very contentious primaries in both the Democratic and Republican parties. He's the longest serving member in state's history, 40 years in Capitol Hill as both a congressman and a U.S. Senator. Pat Roberts will be retiring when his term expires early in 2021. Okay, we're going to wrap up our conversation here. I want to thank Samuel King. He covers Missouri government for KCUR. Jason Rosenbaum covers government and politics for St. Louis Public Radio. Thanks for the great update on all things Missouri. We sure appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, the best music of 2018. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, a conversation with the Lee Summit School Superintendent, who's seeking to increase educational equity in that community. You can hear that and other previous programs at kcur.org/uptodate. Monday, we'll learn about supporting life decision-making concepts for the disabled and how to supplant the traditional concept of guardianship. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Okay, the ballots are in, the reviews have been written, and now we're about to unveil the best music of 2018, both from Kansas City artists and as well as national talents, as determined by our very extraordinary experts. We're going to hear a little Kanye, a little Cardi B. We're going to hear some jazz, some hip-hop, and some rock. And we'll get going right now. Our team of top-notch reviewers is Bill Brownlee. He's a KCUR contributor, star music reviewer, and curator of PlasticSax.com. That's the best jazz blog in Kansas City. Bill, always good to have you here.
Good morning.
Judy Mills is owner of Mills Record Company in Westport. Judy, good morning to you.
Thank you.
Kelvin Arsenia is back. He's a Kansas City multi-talented musician and harpist. Kelvin, nice to have you.
Hello, thank you.
Bill, what made 2018 different from any other year out there? Anything?
This was a difficult, very loud year in all regards, and I gravitated toward music that was loud and difficult.
Judy, what do you think about that?
I think absolutely. I feel like there's a lot of there's some protest music, not a very overt, but more like subtle, and I feel like the loudness is part of that.
Kelvin, are you hearing loud too?
Absolutely. I feel like a lot of people are finally getting out what they've been processing over the last couple of years, and it's really exciting music, a lot of very exposed emotions.
A lot of anger, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are angry at what? I can only begin to imagine.
Yeah, I think just injustice, you know, injustice and improper treatment of people.
Mm-hmm. Bill, you see that too?
For certain, and it is an exciting time for that reason. I think artists of every stripe, including musicians, are reacting to what they see around them.
Okay. Well, let's move on and actually listen to some music here. Bill Brownlee, let's start with Logan Richardson. We're talking about best local artists here. He's a Kansas City native, one of the most daring artists in jazz, and you want to talk about his latest album.
Yes. This year he released an album called Blues People.
Mm-hmm.
And it's abrasive, it's confrontational, but Logan, among maybe any jazz artist under the age of 40, I think has found a viable, entirely unique path forward. And the selection I've chosen for us to listen to a snippet of is called Anthem to Human Justice.
Just what we were talking about.
Just what we were talking about.
This is from Blues People, the artist Logan Richardson. That's Logan Richardson, a Kansas City artist from his album Blues People, the song Anthems to Human Justice. Now, he's really made a name for himself nationally. This album was on a number of best of across the country this year.
Yeah, he represents Kansas City really well. He's proud to be from here, even though he spends a lot of time in Europe. This is the sound of Kansas City jazz in 2019.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, let's move on as we talk about best local music of 2018. Judy, you want to talk about Shy Boys.
I've always loved this band, and I'm glad that they're finally getting some of the exposure outside of Kansas City that they deserve. This is their first release on Polyvinyl, a bigger label, and they're just... The song is called Bell House, and a lot of the songs are about the house they lived on Bell Street and their time together. And there's two brothers and best friends, and then it's a great record, and they work really hard, and it's very dreamy and luscious vocals, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Let's check it out. This group again, Shy Boys, the song here, Something Sweet, from the album Bell House. How can you not like that?
Right?
That's great music.
Yes.
Yeah. What else do you like about them?
I mean, just the way they sound. Yeah. And like that, like I said, they've been doing this for so long, and they just keep doing it because they love it, and they work really hard, and they're fine, and it's with good results.
Calvin, you also mentioned them as one of your favorites of the year.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I love their harmonies, and I love them as people as well, but this album is just really, really clean and really well done.
Mm-hmm. I gather this kind of music is harder to pull off than it sounds.
Well, I think you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Calvin Arsenia, let's move to you and the artist C.X. Luxem.
C.S. Luxem. This album, I met C.S. Luxem a couple of years ago, and speaking of Shy Boys, I found him to be quite a gentle, soft-spoken soul. And listening to this record, there is definitely another side to him, from what I gather.
Often is, Calvin. Yeah.
Isn't there?
That's human nature. Yeah.
This album, I love it for its really smart and clever production. There's a lot of layers, a lot of sounds, a lot of... something that I look for in music so much is to hear a progression through a song, that it's not just going back immediately to the same sounds or revisiting the same sounds, even if it might be the chorus again, that we're introducing a new concept or a new story. And I think from start to finish, this album does that.
He does this all by himself, right?
I mean, he's got some other people playing with him on the record, but I think C.S. Luxem is his name.
Okay, yeah. C.S. Luxem, the song here, Heel Support, from the album Symptoms. Does not sound shy in that track.
Not one bit.
One bit. You know, I'm always struck to listen to these songs, you know, the extent to which these folks bare their souls to the world. It really is a remarkable thing to put out music like this, really not knowing how it's going to be received.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah. And managing that can be, I imagine, very difficult at times.
But it's also very, very cathartic. I mean, it's just like a relieving, you know, it's like a massage. Like it's a little rough on the onset, but afterwards you feel so much better.
Yeah. Okay, that artist again, C.S. Luxon. We're talking about the best music of 2018 with our good panel here. Let's move on to a second round here and our best global artist of the year. Judy, let's go to an artist he calls himself, a trio.
Yes, Low.
Low. Tell us about Low.
Well, Low is, you know, I think Slowcore actually was created, the name Slowcore was created because of Low. And it's a very quiet band, but it builds, especially on this new record. And they're from Duluth. It's a husband and wife plus an extra. She learned how to play the drums because of this band. And this band was formed because he was sick of trying to grow an audience. He just wanted to do his own thing. And that's exactly what he's done. And they become famous because of that.
Well, they start slow because it's so cold up in Duluth. It takes a while to get going when it's cold up there.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's listen to Low. This track is Dancing and Blood from the album Double Negative. I like this music we're playing so far this year. And you're saying this music builds as it goes along.
Yes, it does. It's very cinematic. There's a lot of space. It gets very loud and it's very quiet. And it's just, it's an experience.
I'm going to take your word for it. That group, again, called Low, the song Dancing and Blood. Kelvin Arsenia, you're up next. And you want to talk about an artist who's been around for a bit.
Yeah, this is Brandi Carlile.
Yes.
Yeah, like you said, I've loved her music since I heard The Story. I mean, a lot of people recognize that song. But this album, like we were talking about earlier, is kind of her... she's really embodying her activist voice. And doing it in a way that's very clever. I think this whole album is full of really beautiful lyrics. And her voice is I mean, the lyrics are so beautiful and so deep and so poetic, and her voice on top of it is just like cream. And
she goes back how far now?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, we're talking a long time here, right?
She's been at it for more than a decade.
For sure, more than a decade. Okay. Well, this song is The Joke from Brandi Carlile's new album, By the Way, I Forgive You. Stop.
Don't ever let them steal your joy and your gentle ways to keep them from running wild. They can kick dirt in your face, dress you down and tell you that your place is in the middle when they hate the way you shine. I see you tugging on your shirt, trying to hide inside of it and hide how much it hurts. Let them laugh while they can. Let them spin. Let them scatter in the wind. I have been to the moon.
Wow. Brandi Carlile, the track The Joker from the album By the Way I Forgive You. She's been nominated for 6 Grammys in 2019, including Album of the Year, and you can hear why, I think, in that track. That's just amazing. Bill Brownlee, let's go to Cardi B for a very different sound, I think.
Yeah, Kelvin suggested that Brandi Carlile was very deep. Cardi B has no depth whatsoever, and that's part of the reason I love her.
Yeah.
12 months ago, she was an Instagram celebrity with a, what was considered at the time, like, with one novelty hit. Today, she's perhaps the biggest pop star in the world. She had such an amazingly monumental 2018.
You clearly like her.
I don't know how anyone can't. She's funny. She's herself. She just lays it all out there. And Barack Obama recently listed his favorite things of 2018, and this song was among them.
Huh.
Your staff member Devin just told me that at the Power and Light District at the stroke of midnight, the song we're about to play, I like it, was the first song played at midnight.
Wow.
At Kansas City's biggest party. This is the most popular song of the year, and it's certainly on my list as well.
Let's check it out. Cardi B, I Like It, from the album Invasion of Privacy.
I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing. I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks. I like going to the jeweler, I put rocks all in my watch. I like texts from my exes when they want a second chance. I like proving wrong, I do what they say I can't. They call me Cardi, Cardi, banging body, spicy mommy, hot tamale, hotter than a Somali. Ferrari, hop up the stoop, jump in the coupe. Big dip on top of the roof, flexing on as hard as I can. Eating halal, driving a Lamb. So that bitch, I'm sorry though. Got my coins like Mario. Yeah, they call me Cardi B. I run this shit like cardio. Diamond District in the chain.
That's Cardi B, I Like It. She's the artist considered by many to be the people's choice for 2019. Cardi B from the album Invasion of Privacy. We're running through the best music of 2018. We're going to turn now to the artist of the year. It can be a global artist, it can be a local artist, it can be anybody our critics choose here. Calvin Arsenio, let's begin with you, and you're picking someone with local roots.
Yes, the one and only Janelle Monáe.
One and only.
This 2018 was such an amazing year for the world to see her.
Yes.
And for us to finally see what she's been working on for the last several years.
She was in town.
Yeah, she was. I saw her at the Starlight Theater with the Open Spaces event, and she brought it. She brought everything, and it was simple, it was clean. And the same goes with the record. It's cinematic, it is it's conceptual but also very relatable, and really exciting for so many different reasons. But I'm really grateful that she keeps talking about Kansas City in the midst of such an amazing piece of work.
Let's talk about and listen to Janelle Monáe. This is Django Jane from the album Dirty Computer.
Yeah, this is my palace. Champagne in my chalice. I got it all covered like a wedding band. Wonderland, so my alias is Alice. And we gonna start a mother riot. Or we gonna have to put them on a diet. Look at that, I guarantee I got them quiet. Look at that, I guarantee they all inspired. A-Town made it out there. Straight out Kansas City, yeah, we made it out there. Celebrated, graduated, made it past fail. Sassy, classy, Kool-Aid with the gale. Mama was a G, she was cleaning hotels. Papa was a driver, I was working retail. Kept us in the back of the store, we ain't hitting no more moonlit. Already got the Oscar for the Casa. Running down Grammys with the family. Probably give a Tony to the homies. Probably get an Emmy dedicated to the highly melanated. Arc Android orchestrated. Yeah, we highly melanated. Arc Android orchestrated. Yeah, Gemini still jamming. Box office.
That's Janelle Monáe from the album Dirty Computer. How was your performance here in town for Open Spaces?
Yeah, it was beautiful. There was screens showing the different music videos that she recorded for this for this album, and then there was dancers, and she was dancing and singing and playing guitar and rolling on the floor and in the audience, and it was awesome.
She has become just internationally huge, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a part of that was also the movies that she has been recently a part of as well. But then after that, releasing this record, showing that yes, she is an amazing musician and singer and writer, is really, really, really cool.
Multi-talented might be the case here with Janelle Monáe.
Yeah.
Bill Brownlee, Kanye, explain yourself if you would.
I am happy to. It's important for everyone to know that in 2004, I picked up a promotional copy of a record that was going to be coming out soon, College Dropout, Kanye West. I got in my rental car and popped it in the CD player and about drove off the road. That first Kanye West album, College Dropout, changed my life. I've been an admirer ever since. Kanye doesn't make it easy to be a fan because, he's
so controversial.
I don't know what he's done today even, but I'm sure he's made a headline today for something that's probably very ridiculous. But that doesn't take away from the music he creates. In 2018, he produced 5 albums.
Wow.
And they're all very, very good.
Wow.
They're adventurous, experimental, and extremely exciting. One of the albums he produced was his own, and it's outstanding.
Let's listen to a track here. This is Ghost Town from the EP Yay?
Yay, yeah. And this is a sort of a 21st century gospel track. Sunday. I wanna hit the red dot and never find someday.
I've been trying to make you love me, but everything I try just takes you further from me. Someday we gon' set it off. Someday we gon' get this off. Baby, don't you bet it all on a path of fentanyl. You might think that
that's Kanye West. Bill Brownlee defending Kanye as one of the great artists of our times, and you feel that strongly about him.
Oh, I don't think anyone in the last 15 years has put together better and more important body of work than Kanye.
Just amazing. Okay. Judy Mills, you hold the envelope for the final pick of this show as we review the best music of 2018. Talk to me about the artist BTS.
Well, BTS is a boy band who does K-pop, is K-pop, but they've just become really worldwide. And in large part, they've broke the Western market this year, and they're breaking Billboard Music Awards, Spotify Awards, YouTube Awards, our records, just like crazy. And largely in support of the fan, their fan base called ARMY. And so, and their
fans call themselves the ARMY.
The ARMY. And they're the ones who brought them to the Billboard Music Awards, and they did a because it was a fan-based voter's choice, and it was overwhelming. And so that started the year, and they just sort of took the United States, and they did a really beautiful speech about inclusion and about diversity in front of the UN.
Which has been a theme throughout our show here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of contrary to the culture that they're from too. So it's a more dramatic statement than just, being woke. I mean, they're taking a chance, and they're on the cover of Time magazine, and they're also incredibly talented.
And when you say boy band, you mean teenagers?
Yes. Well, that's how they were started. They came from all parts.
They've grown up a little bit since.
Yeah, they came from all. It's kind of a David and Goliath sort of situation because they came from all parts of the country in a very small company, and they've gained worldwide success.
Okay, this song is Fake Love from the album Love Yourself Tear, right? Okay.
Real 사람이면 난
That's the band BTS, the track Fake Love, the final pick of our best music of 2018. And I should point out that we asked our panel for their three top picks in each category today, and the complete list of their picks will be on our webpage later on this afternoon. I want to thank you all for coming in. You expanded my horizons, which I guess is the point of all this, and my horizons need expanding, so I appreciate that very much. Bill Brownlee, a KCUR contributor, curator of PlasticSax.com, Judy Mills, owner of Mills Record Company in Westport, Calvin Arsenia, a Kansas City multi-talented musician. Thank you all for coming in. Sure appreciate it. Happy New Year to all of you. Yeah. Monday on the show, we asked municipal lawmakers from Lee's Summit and Olathe about the big issues their communities are dealing with and whether they're influenced by things going on in Kansas City. Our theme music is composed by Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Maria Carter, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Devin Davis. I'm Steve Kraske. Have a great weekend, all, and you are up to date.